Thank you for listening to this podcast from TheUnheardNerd.com. If you like what you hear, please consider liking, sharing, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast feed of choice, and help us to keep creating and improving our content. Thank you. My name is Will, and you're listening to a one-shot podcast from TheUnheardNerd.com. Way back in October 2013, we got to interview Mike Petchy, a photographer and director whose fan film, The Dead Can't Be Distracted, based on the Punisher character, had been shut down by Marvel for copyright infringement. Came as something of a surprise, as the film had been sandwiched between two other Punisher fan films, which Marvel apparently didn't seem to bat an eyelid at, the most notable being Dirty Laundry, starring Thomas Jane, who reprised his role from the movie. We sat and talked with Mike for something like an hour, and he told us all about the film, the process about making it, his influences, where he comes from, what he's all about, but also how he could see the Punisher character being treated in the future. And a lot of what he says has turned out to be strangely prophetic. So we're going to revisit that interview and listen to it again. I do apologise for the audio. It's not up to the standards that we currently maintain, but it is listenable to. We've come a long way in the last 3 years. The reason for revisiting the interview now is that on today, the 18th of March 2016, the Daredevil Season 2 has just dropped on Netflix, a Netflix exclusive from Marvel, and it will introduce the Punisher character to the Marvel television universe, if you like. So it's going to be interesting to see how that character develops and how accurate some of Mike's predictions in this podcast were. Mike has moved on to other projects. His fan film never saw the light of day, unfortunately, but he is currently in post-production on his feature film, which is called 12 Kilometers. It's a concept that came to him while he was in terrible pain after an awful injury. And actually, it was kind of an infusion of his nightmares that he's used as inspiration for his film. And if you want to find out more about that, and please do, go to 12 Kilometers, that's the number 12, 12kilometers.com, and find out more about that. But now, revisiting an interview with Mike Petchy from October the 13th, 2013. Enjoy this one.
TheUnheardNerd.com.
Okay, so joining us on the show this week is a very special guest. It's Mike Petchy. How you doing, Mike?
What's happening, fellas?
Yeah, we're good, we're good. And we've been very excited about the project you've been working on, a fan film, a Punisher film called The Dead Can't Be Distracted. And I know we've had a lot of interest through our website, a lot of hits to any article about it. But let's find out a little bit about you. You are Mike Petchy. You are half of McFarland and Petchy, and you have done all sorts of interesting projects, including music videos with the likes of Fear Factory, Killswitch Engage, and recently Czarface.
Yeah, Czarface, yeah.
So how did you come to work with Ian McFarland? What's your relationship with him?
It's funny. We found each other on Craigslist, which is like, you guys know what Craigslist is.
We do. Yeah.
So we found ourselves on Craigslist, and I was doing a lot of photography and directing on my own, and I had my own company for quite some time, and then he was doing the same. And Ian is from the music world. So he's from a pretty infamous band, and he was doing music videos, and he decided that he wanted to find a camera operator to be able to work on his music videos with him. And we met up randomly because I responded to a Craigslist ad posting, and we ended up hanging out and talking all afternoon, and then I shot a video for him. And after that video, we realized that we worked really well together as collaborators, and that we both were doing a lot of the directing. And so we ended up teaming up. And for quite some time, we did a lot of music video work, and we were represented and doing music videos for some larger metal acts, and then got into some hip hop acts. And our partnership as directors ended up forming the company that we have. So basically, we were dating for a very long time and decided to get married.
How long ago did you actually meet? How long has this relationship been going?
I think we've been together at this point as a partnership. I mean, we've been in business, like, officially for about 2-3 years, but we've been working together for almost 9. And, this business is all about trust, and it's all about trusting the people that you work with. And Ian is incredibly talented, and I wanted to get into business with someone that I would learn a lot from and have a blast hanging out with. And as much as we seem like a really big business, we're really just a really fun hangout. And our whole thing really is we're a creative clubhouse, and we do the work that we really love to do. We're very choosy about what music video acts we work with. We're very choosy about what projects we do. And we just really have a blast. And for us, it's all about it's not about the films. It's not about leaving a mark on this world. It's not about any of that. It's about the process. It's about the fun that you have when you're making these things.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but what comes across from looking at your website and checking out some of the projects you've done is that actually a lot of your fun comes from actually using the equipment and playing around with it, seeing what it can do and how far you can take it. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, we do all sorts of stuff. Like, for the equipment side of things, I've been a director of photography and a photographer for years, and the equipment is like 50% of your job. And so you're constantly messing around with new toys and pushing the toys. And I have a crew of dudes that I work with that are all techies, and we have a lot of fun testing stuff. And we test things and try out different pieces of equipment from different companies. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But that's only part of the whole thing. I mean, really, I'm constantly saying that first and foremost, we're storytellers, and we really enjoy people, and we really enjoy hanging out with folks. And for us, we'll plan a trip or we'll go do a project somewhere else, and we'll bring people with us on that crew or people with us to be a part of it that we love to be around. And it's all about different adventures for us. So the work really is just, when we get work, it's an excuse for us to go on these adventures and sort of discover it, you know?
Yeah. And you, obviously, there's a major photographic element to your work as well. Where's your true love lie? Is it film or is it photography?
It's funny. I went to school to be a director, and that's what I wanted to do. And I went to school in New York for that. And when I graduated, I decided to move back to Boston because I live in Boston.
Yeah.
And I came back here because I was taught in New York how to produce more than anything else. And I moved to a city that I had never lived in before, and it forced me to have to figure out how to get locations for people you don't know, how to actually get stuff for nothing. And I figured that if I moved back into the city, it would be simpler for me because I had family here and I had a lot of friends here. And I knew that I could tap into those resources to make the films that I wanted.
Yeah.
And so coming back into the city at a young age and trying to be a filmmaker, you want to hire really great director of photography. But when you don't have that clout yet and you don't have that experience, it's very difficult to convince somebody for no money to come down and work with you. So frustrated with that, I ended up teaching myself how to be a director of photography. And I spent a few years doing that. And part of my lessons and part of my exercises for that was still photography. So I would actually practice the art of telling a story with a frame and practice the art of visual storytelling, basically. And through that process, accidentally, I became a photographer. Like, it's funny. I'm marketed as a photographer these days, but I don't have a portfolio. I just pick random projects that I want to work on that I think are a lot of fun,
yeah.
And then do them. So my main... Storytelling is what I love to do, and the thing I love about directing is that it takes everything.
It's interesting that you mentioned telling a story with pictures, because obviously comic books have been an influence on your most recent or on some of your recent work. You got into comics fairly young, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, comic books. The funny thing is when I was a kid. I've told this story before, but when I was a kid, my parents were concerned with me because I hated to read. And so out of desperation, my mother went to the local drugstore and picked up a couple comic books and threw them in my lap. And she's like, hey, check these out, hoping that I would pick up reading. And it did quite the opposite. I actually fell in love with comic books and I fell in love with visual storytelling. So much so that so much so that I thought I was going to be a comic book artist.
All right. You're artistic as well. You draw?
Yeah. I spent years sort of doing all the classical comic. I'm not the classical art studies. So I did figure drawing and then oil painting and all that stuff for a while. But I was a terrible student, a really shitty student. So I didn't get into art school.
I guess it comes in handy with storyboarding, though.
Yeah, no, really, it does. It's funny, like, I've had huge, like, growing up as a kid, I loved Jim Lee, so any Jim Lee artwork, and he's done stuff from, like, X-Men to Wildcats. I mean, I fell in love with Jim Lee women, the women that he draws in his books, so if you look a lot of my model photography, it's all based upon that and my love for his stuff. So the comic book influence has been with me since I was a kid, and it sort of flows through all of my work. And I've had the pleasure of being able to hang out with a lot of really interesting comic book artists and writers. And I did a small project with Ben Templesmith for a while, and I love it. And I think it's a wonderful medium, and I think it's like one of the best new art expressions that there are out there. I mean, it's phenomenal. And the fact that it's doing so well right now, and the fact that Marvel is flourishing, and the work that they're putting out right now, like, I'm an avid Marvel reader. Like, I have been for years, and yeah. I've been going at it again since, like, World War Hulk all the way through the new initiative stuff. And it's like, the artists are outstanding. So yeah. Like, for me, I'm constantly lost in that.
There really is a high quality coming out, and I think comics are on the up again, in part because of tablet computing, and it makes it so easy for you to access a whole worldwide library of comics on your iPad or on your Android tablet. You can get them straight away, there's no waiting, you don't have to go to the comic store, and they're there, they're easily available, and I think that's in part, thanks to the rise of comics again.
I completely agree with you, man. And there's just something so awesome about the way that they do it now. And I mean, it's gotten so unbelievable. It's not just simple frames. It's like action that breaks the frames. It's like a sense of energy, a sense of emotion. Like, and some of the new stuff is just absolutely outstanding. Like, I pick up a book every week and I'm like, holy shit, this guy just fucking killed this. Like, it's really cool stuff, you know?
So what are you reading at the moment?
I was really pumped about the Uncanny X-Force. Yeah. Like, I was really pumped about that. And then the whole fall from grace with Cyclops and the Avengers versus X-Men thing, and then how awesome Marvel, like, the job that these guys have done at, like, rearranging the teams.
Yeah.
Like, really screwing up the universe and making all these books interesting to read again. I'm lost in that hole. Like, unfortunately, it means you got to go buy like 10 books a week.
it's true. Yeah, I try and wait for the collected edition sometimes.
I can't. I'm a kid. You know? Well, I'm flipping through them, looking at the artwork, and they're like, "All right, dude, you got to buy."
I have to limit myself to maybe two or three a week, and that's it. I can't keep spare. I've got a family, I've got kids, you know.
Oh, just to keep up with the story arcs at this point, it's like $100 a week, easy.
Yeah, you could. So going back to those first comics, do you remember the first ones your mum bought you?
Yeah, I was reading Amazing Spider-Man. What was the issue number? I wrote it in my article. It was like, early Amazing Spider-Man, and it was artwork by Eric Larson, and was during like the second big Sinister Six storyline that they did, so they had all these really cool crossovers and like all these other Marvel characters that came into it, like the Hulk was involved with it, the Punisher was involved with it, so it was like very much like an old Western. So you had all these characters who I didn't know anything about as a kid walking into this book and saving different moments of the story and saving the day here and there, or like causing trouble. And I just absolutely fell in love with that. I mean, the colors were ridiculous, and the way he drew women was like ridiculous.
That's a recurring theme there, Mike.
Yeah. No, it's just it's funny, if you've met any of my girlfriends, they all look like comic book illustrators.
So we should move on then to a comic in particular by Greg Rucka and Marco Cecchetto, and that would be The Punisher, their run of The Punisher, and that was quite a heavy influence, it seems.
Yeah, it was really strange because the only other Punisher I had really read, and it's because I'm an artist nerd, you know, so I end up following around artists.
Yeah.
And I was such a huge Jim Lee fan that I went back and looked at his back catalog, and I saw that he drew for the War Journal. So he was doing the old Punisher War Journal stuff. And I read through those, and the storyline was okay, and I was really sort of trying to follow his art. But I never really got into Frank. Like, he's a pretty one-dimensional character. It's like my wife and kids are dead.
Yeah.
And I'm pissed off about it, so I'm just going to run around and shoot people. So he never really captivated
me. Yeah.
And I happened to pick up the new version, like Rucka's run of it. And honestly, the reason why I picked it up was because of the art.
Right.
Like Marco's artwork was like really cool. And then I saw the vest, because they had the vest with the spray paint.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like, fucking of course, man. Like, what does the Punisher have, like a silk screen shop in the warehouse? So when I saw the vest and I saw the spray paint on the vest, I was in immediately. Because I knew that they were treating it realistic, and I knew that they were actually trying to ground him in some sort of reality.
Yeah. So it wasn't a storyline I'd ever come across. I'd never really read The Punisher either, but having read that you were influenced by it, and it was the major influence for the short film, The Dead Can't Be Distracted. I then went and read it, and thoroughly agree. I really, really enjoyed it. I obviously got the collected edition. Yeah, some years after it's been out. I think it's been out a few years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, at least for a year. Time travels, brother, so.
Yeah, so I got it and read through it and thoroughly enjoyed Volume 1, indeed. And but that obviously stuck with you. At what point did you think, right, I need to take this and make it into a film?
Well, really, I was doing another project at the time. I was doing this music video at the time, and we were doing a torture scene for it. And I'm down in this dungy basement, and we have a guy in a bucket, and we're electrocuting him, and we're doing all this really cool stuff.
Just your average day.
Yeah, you know, like another day. And we had got our hands on these really sweet anamorphic lenses, the same kind of stuff that they would shoot Die Hard with. And my images that I was shooting looked like a movie, and they looked fantastic. And I was sitting there, and I had been reading that comic book that night, and I was sitting there going, man, it would be so cool to be able to take this technical stuff that we've figured out, yeah, be able to apply it to Frank Castle, and would be able to do something realistic with it and fun and stylized and like be able to pull a lot of these different things into it. And, you know, the first concern is that, okay, so we're going to make some fan fiction and that's what we're going to do. So, like, there's no money involved. Like, I'm not going to make any money. There's no one's going to actually give you loot for something that you're not going to make any money back on.
Yeah.
So it has to be self-financed. And at that point, I was just like, all right, look, I got a couple extra bucks in the bank from this. So I'm just going to dump it into this piece because it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be fun for us to work on. It'll be fun for us to sort of test a lot of these new techniques out with. But more importantly, it would be really fun to show the world who he could be on film.
Yeah.
And really, that's what we wanted to get across here, is that what we're trying to do with the article and with the fan film is make a comment on the status of one of the most iconic comic book characters in comics as it is. Like, our goal is to just push and debate the merits of making a harder Punisher movie. Because, I mean, I love the Thomas Jane stuff. I love Thomas Jane. He's awesome. He's really great as a Punisher, but I always felt like all the movies that they were doing were really watered down.
Yeah.
And I understand that there's logistics involved. I understand that, you know, that you make a lot more money with a PG-13, but you're talking about a character that runs around and shoots people to death and kills them and murders them and tortures them.
Yeah.
You know, like, can we not take him seriously? And not do something that is like a Jason Voorhees, like run through a wall and run into a room, hang upside down in a chandelier and spin around and shoot the shit out of everybody in the room. Like, the thing that's so cool about Rucka's book is that he's a man. So
yeah.
He gets wounded. He gets hurt. Like, he actually has his eye ripped out. And then it takes the entire run of the book for his eye to heal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, That's realistic. And if you're saying that he is the one man in this universe that doesn't have superpowers, that it commands this sort of stature and fear amongst all these folks, then how does he do it? And in the same way that they did with the Batman stuff, and Nolan did such an amazing job at making it seem real, you could do a very similar technique with the Punisher, and it's even more relevant. because the Punisher is someone without superheroes. The Punisher is someone without like wealth behind him. I mean, he steals money from all these guys and puts it into his business, but I'm incredibly fascinated with what his day-to-day routine is. Like, like what does he do when he buys all these real estate properties in New York? Like, what's that like? What's walking around with a real estate agent like you know what I mean? Like, how do you do that? Or we had this other great idea of doing a piece, and all of our stuff is short form because I feel like short form is the best way to tell his story. Because it's not like you want to see the final story arc for the Punisher. It's not like you want to see him like finally kill the guy that pissed him off, and then at the end of it, like, he walks away with some new chick and starts a new family. Like, that's
yeah
that's not what it is. And so when you actually go and make it into a feature system that way, and it follows the normal hour and a half structure, and you have to sort of have a payoff in the movie, you kind of have to have some sort of wraparound and payoff for that. But if you are to do this as a series, if you're to do this as a short form series, you really can dive into the mechanics based around what he's doing and then how he's affecting other folks around him. And that to me is really interesting. Like, if you were to treat it like a Breaking Bad, or if you were to treat it like one of these other dramatic television shows that happens to be incredibly violent. And that was one of the reasons why I was saying to do it on the internet. I mean, yeah, it's, you can do it very inexpensive, first off. And then second, there's no stress because it's on the internet. So, like, you could put it out on the internet, and if you make something that is semi-decent, people are like, okay, cool, this is a really cool clip, let's watch this thing. You know what I mean? So I felt like that format is the best place to sort of experiment with who the hell Frank Castle is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You mentioned you like the Thomas Jane portrayal of the Punisher. Would it be fair to say you prefer the Dirty Laundry version rather than the full-length film?
Yeah, I mean, the Dirty Laundry version, I think, was much better than the full-length film. And then Adi and those guys, the Adi brand that created that film, I actually I talked to a couple of the guys that he worked with because of the circumstances, and they're really cool fucking dudes, man. Yeah. And it turns out that he's an awesome producer that I love. Like, he made films last year like The Gray, Killing Him Softly, and Dread. Those movies were fucking awesome.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, big fan of Dread.
There's this dude that's making that stuff. So the quality of it, and the fact that he was able to do it with Thomas Jane, the fact that he was able to do it with Hellboy, what's his name? Ron Perlman, is awesome. But the piece itself wasn't really about what Frank Castle does. I mean, sure, he went and did his laundry, and then he went and had vengeance against this scene about like this gang fight with these kids and all that sort of stuff. And I dug it. I really, really dug it, but it wasn't what I wanted from the Punisher. And I haven't seen that yet. And the short piece, because we made a short piece, fellas. Like, we made a 5-6 minute clip for this thing. We started to sort of tackle into the mood and the vibe and the emotion based around these folks. But the more that we started to develop that, the more it was like, holy shit, we can actually do some really fascinating moments in this guy's life and really interesting bits and pieces. Like, how does he plan to go in to kill a building of 30 dudes? Like, you know he's going to pre-stage that, you know? So you know he's going to be sitting, like, Frank Castle will be sitting in his basement and, like, drawing it out and then actually go through the process of going, okay, there's 30 guys here. How am I going to kill each one of these guys? And if that was a whole bit and you're watching him plan that and you're watching him go through and fail every time until he makes it happen through his brain, that's a cool segment. You know what I mean? Like, really fascinating technical war shit, because he's at war, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So long story short, I loved the Dirty Laundry piece. I thought it was really cool, and I thought for what they did for a short film, badass. Is it what I want to see from the Punisher? No.
Fair enough. Okay. And so you've got an idea that you want to make happen. You're self-funding it. How did you go about casting? How did you go about getting locations, getting props, getting everything you needed together and actually making the film? That must have been hard.
Yeah, man. I mean, self-financing it. I don't know if there's an illusion out there that I make a lot of money, but I don't. I got a little business, and I do a little bit of work here and there, and the music video business does not pay anything. So for me, it wasn't a large lump of money. You know, it was a very small sum, but we've done so much stuff on an independent scale at this point. I've been doing this for about 10 years. that I know how to make the most out of my loot. And it really comes down to like connections, and it comes down to your friends, and it comes down to the people that you want to work with and the people that want to do something really cool. And it was another reason why I wanted to do this Punisher piece, because a lot of people wanted to work on it. Like crew members and really talented folks were like, yeah, fuck yeah, I will work on this thing for no money. I'll work on this thing and hang out with you for beers. And we're going to be so pumped about it because we get to do the techniques that we wanted to see in all those other movies in this little piece. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So you get those guys on board, and then you do the same thing. Like, you end up scouting locations. We shot all of it here in Boston. You end up trying to find the connections to people that have really great spaces. And one of the locations that we were lucky enough to get, it was an accidental find, because we had this guy who was friends with my uncle walk us through a couple of buildings that he owned. And they were like motorcycle shops, and they were like warehouse spaces, and they were pretty typical of the places that you would expect to see in like a TV drama. You know what I mean? You go into a TV drama and it's like the faux like bad guy hangout. And we don't have the money for production design, you know? So we have to sort of find a spot that has everything included. And we were going through these spots. They were really cool. The people were really cool. And then offhandedly, he said, yeah, I got this shitty old building that I don't think is going to work for you guys. And I was like, well, just take us there anyways, man, you know?
Yeah.
So we showed up, and this building was a time capsule. Like, it literally, the whole bottom floor was like an old machine shop from like the 60s that hadn't been touched. Like, the business folded, and they left everything in there. And we walked through this place. It was massive. Like, it was an old mill. So New England has a lot of these old mills.
Yeah.
So they have like years and years and years of like lead paint texturing. You know what I mean? Like, really cool shit. And so going into that space, we walked in there, and it was like, holy shit, this is the Punisher's. You know? So finding that, the location was a big one for us, because if I couldn't find good locations to do it for no money, then the project was dead. The other thing that was big was actors.
Yeah.
And for this piece, I knew I wasn't going to do a gunfight scene. I knew that I wasn't going to do a big gunfight action scene, which most of these films would have, because a lot of people associate the Punisher with weapons, and they associate the Punisher with that. And it's a huge part of what he does, and it's a very important part. But I figured it was more important for us to set a tone and vibe with the emotion that the actors were giving us, to prove what the actors could do, more so than whether or not I could shoot a cool gunfight scene.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've seen a million gunfight scenes before.
Yeah, man. And at this point, it was hard enough for me to just do what I did in it with live ammo. But at this point, you see a lot of like false gunfight scenes where people are running around with rubber guns, and they composite in like gun effects afterwards. And it looks stupid. Like, the actors have no response to the guns. There's no sense of dread or drama in the piece, because everybody knows it's fake. And you're just doing this whole make-believe bit. And for us, and my influence comes from films from the 80s and the 70s and the grindhouse era and all that, where it feels very real. Like, it smells very real. For me, with everything that I've done, and especially in this piece, I want to sort of create that vibe. And that finding that warehouse space was step one. Step two, we're finding these actors that could emote and not just be placeholders holding guns that were firing weapons, you know?
Yeah.
So that's when I found Nick, and Nick is a fantastic Punisher. I had worked with him. I saw him in a student film where it was this awesome student sci-fi film, and he was just incredibly emotive without speaking.
Yeah.
And he had these scenes where he was just thinking, and he was very pensive, and the camera loved him. And I knew immediately that I wanted to work with this guy, and we had hung out quite a bit, and we're trying to find a project to work on together. And when I decided to do this, not only did he look like the character from the book, and he was a younger version of Frank Castle, because in the Ruckus series, he was saying that he came out of the war in Iraq instead of coming out of Vietnam, which I think is reasonable.
Yeah.
Then he was perfect. And then Evelina, who plays Sergeant Cole, she and I had worked together on this project that I had done before, like a little horror piece. And I had spent a day filming with her, and we had so much fun together. She's amazing. Like, she, not only is she an amazing model, but she's like this incredibly emotive actress. And I had originally seen a trailer with her on a film that her and her boyfriend had directed and produced, where she had a shaved head and she was this punk girl. And I couldn't take my eyes off her, and I couldn't take my eyes off the screen as I watched her, and it was perfect.
Yeah.
Because I knew that a lot of what happens in the Punisher books is inner monologue, so a lot of what we were going to do in this film was voiceover and scenes without dialogue that needed to emote. And the both of these people had that skill, and at that point, with them and the location, it was like, all right, cool, let's make this thing, you know?
And so you've got your location, you've got your actors. How long did it actually take for you to film and then subsequently put the film together?
Filming was rather quick. I remember that we got our location actors. We probably did everything in about a month. So got all that together, shot it, and then had it in the can. And then post-production was something that we were just doing in our spare time.
Mm.
So it was stuff that we were doing at night. So whenever we had a free moment to edit and do any sort of composite work or color work, that was all night stuff. So that probably took us, oh God, I gotta remember what the schedule was. That probably took us another month or two, you know, because we were doing it here and there.
Yeah, but still overall fairly quick process, really.
It's a short film. Really.
Yeah.
Like I want to stress that, and we've been saying that from the beginning, and there's been a lot of confusion, like, is this a feature, is this not? No, it's under 10 minutes. Like, it's a short little piece that was self-financed on a shoestring budget that just happens to look really cool. And
yeah.
I think because it looked interesting and because it looked different, I think that people assumed that it was something bigger.
But you got an incredible following and an incredible amount of interest in it. I mean, I know I first heard about it because somebody tweeted me a link to the website, you know, just randomly. Some random person just tweeted it saying, I think you'll like this. And you know, that doesn't happen with many fan films or many films in it at all, really.
Yeah.
And so instantly, yeah, well, I just saw the images and yeah, how beautifully portrayed the images were on the website before, you know, the trailer, albeit for a very short time, was released. And just that drew me in, just seeing the pictures. It looked amazing. It looked like a big budget feature film. And you know, it's only, you know, doing a little bit of research that I found out, obviously, it's a short film and the story behind it. And so
yeah.
You've put this film together, you've got it finished, you've a lot of hype building about it, a lot of excitement, a lot of fans interested. You released the trailer, and well, it wasn't up for very long. How long was it up for?
Not long. I think it was up for a few days.
Yeah.
It was up for a few days. And when we released the trailer, it sort of picked up. It was interesting because we were putting out the poster and we were putting out the trailer right before we were going to be putting out the movie. So it was going to be like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Like 1, 2, 3, and then it comes out. And we were basically just putting things online as they were finished. So it was like, okay, this is finished. Let's put this up. This is finished. We'll put this up. This is finished. We'll put this up. And once the trailer went up, like a lot of people gravitated to it immediately. And then you know how the internet works, man. Like, you put something on the internet and then it's got a life of its own.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like privileged, actually, for being able to have seen it. I saw the trailer, I watched the trailer, albeit only once, but I watched the trailer. And then I went back to it a few days later to watch again and was greeted with a message, the dead can't be distracted, it's been temporarily removed due to a copyright claim. We're working hard to resolve these issues so you can see it.
Yeah,
and then that was it. I kind of, it was in the back of my mind, but kind of forgot about it for a little while. Expected it to come out shortly after, but then here we are a few months later, and
yeah.
And I read from your website and from your, you know, very detailed diary description of it, a letter from Marvel, which reads, "While we appreciate your affection for the character, we must demand that you immediately stop your unauthorized use to advertising, sale, and or distribution of any production of The Punisher or any other Marvel character-based films therefore, and any other use of the images, likeness, artwork, or other intellectual property owned by Marvel." So effectively, Marvel shut you down.
Yes.
How did you feel when you got that letter?
It was an interesting moment because we were surprised and then also really sort of flattered that they thought it was something bigger than it was.
Yeah.
And my concern is that I love these guys and I love Marvel and I would love to work with Marvel in some capacity. And so when we heard this, that they had this issue, we immediately went through the process of contacting them and then trying to make sure that they understood what we were doing.
Yeah.
So... And immediately we said to them, look, we're denying, we haven't done it. We don't feel like we've done any infringement. This is a fan labor. This is a piece of fan art. We're not trying to make any money on this stuff, guys. Like, we're not charging for anything. We just want to further develop and show you guys that the Punisher could be something new, something cool, and show you guys that the fans will sort of potentially, apparently, according to the images that we've released, the fans are really responding to a Punisher in this vein, you know? And for us, it was that. It's really such a strange moment to be recognized by this company that has influenced you for so long, and that has influenced your work and inspired you since you were a kid, you know?
Yeah.
So at first it's like, all right, wow, okay, cool. So these guys are interested in what we're doing, and they obviously are telling us to stop because they feel like something's up. So cool. Let's pull everything down. We'll just go with what they want, and then we'll just talk them through it. So like, let's pull everything off the web. We pulled down the teaser. We asked the folks that had posted the teaser to pull down the teaser. So we cleared the air just to show them that we're not trying to fuck with anybody. At that point, we wanted to just sort of express to them like that we're doing this. Ultimately, it's a short film. It's not a feature length piece. And we're doing this because we love the character. We want to show you who he could be and where he could go from here.
Yeah, you know? I described it in my most recent post on the website as a love letter to Marvel. And for that character, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the potential there was to form it into a web series.
Yeah, I mean, that ultimately, like, I would love to pitch them on doing a web series. I'm a young guy, I'm a no-name guy, you know what I mean? So I don't have any like illusion that they're going to be like, yeah, this guy out of nowhere, out of Boston, like, yeah, like, let's give you a shitload of money, or let's give you a little bit of money and make this thing. I basically put that on there to say to them, like, I've been thinking about this, and this is something that could be really cool.
Yeah.
And if you guys wanted to work with us or work with that, awesome, absolutely amazing, but also consider this. And even if you guys wanted to just talk about it and talk about what it could be, then that would be really cool, you know?
What's your response from Marvel been? Have they got back to you? Have they been willing to talk?
Well, we were dealing with one of their lawyers, and their initial response from us was like, that's all fine and good, but you guys don't have the right to do this. You guys don't have the right to put this movie out. And it occurred to us that, okay, well, we're talking to somebody at Marvel Legal, and it's his job to do that. Like, if he didn't do that, then they would run into a lot of trouble. Yeah. So what we needed to do was get our film seen by people at Marvel Studios and by the people that we know make these kind of decisions. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And cracking that egg and getting through to executives at Marvel Studios, or getting through to that stuff, is virtually impossible unless you're represented and you drink beers or have drinks with someone that knows somebody that knows somebody. So our next route was, well, maybe it's because our stuff sucks, you know? So why don't we write to Rucka? I'll write to Rucka and I'll see what he thinks.
Yeah.
And so I sent it to him, and he turned out to be the coolest dude, and he watched the film and he loved it, you know, and he's like, this movie's awesome, and I think it represents what we did really well, and this is really cool, and he was an advocate for it, and he wanted to help us in any way he could. And then we ended up showing it to Marco, who loved the film too. He is in a contract with Marvel, so he's got to be careful about what he does or what he says.
Sure.
And I completely respect that. I love his work, and I think he's a great artist, so I'm not going to throw him under the bus. Like, I barely wanted to attach his name to any of this stuff.
Sure.
It just sort of got attached through the press and everything else. So when Rucka saw it, he was like, dude, this is really cool. So we were like, all right, cool. So like, the guys that wrote it, and the guys that made it, like, think that we've been good with this. So awesome. All right. So it's not a piece of shit.
Yeah. I mean, it must be the biggest compliment when the people whose work you've actually paid tribute to say that they enjoy it and that they love it. And I mean, I can't imagine how frustrating it must be to have this finished film ready to go and just not be able to get it out to people to watch. I mean, especially since, you know, it's bookended by Dirty Laundry at one end and the most recent Punisher fan film that's come out, No Mercy. Have you seen that one?
No, I saw the trailer for it, and like, yeah, they put out a trailer too, and it,
yeah.
I just, I, I don't think that Marvel has anything out against us, and I don't think that they're evil corporation. I just think that we were very unfortunate, and we got caught up in some sort of automated system that they do there, where they just got a letter out to us, you know. And we've heard a lot of response from people like, you know, why don't you just put it up, and why don't you just release it online, and why don't you go through this whole process? Well, it's a scary thing, man, because like Marvel is Disney, and like not only do I have respect for these companies and love everything that they do and don't want to become like public enemy number one, but they also have the money to just to like put us in litigation forever, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just don't want to have a beef with them. And the reason why I ended up having to put out the article is because I still want to have them think about and the fans think about who the Punisher could be and what the movies could end up being. And so, and I wanted to sort of remind the audience that there could be a new Punisher. There could be a really good Punisher. I wanted to get them to think about that, and I wanted to see what the audience reaction to that would be. And apparently everybody, whether they like the direction that we were headed in or not, they all feel like the Punisher hasn't been properly done.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rumors on what they were going to do with the Punisher, and some of the rumors were just like, oh, really? You know, like, oh, please don't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So releasing this letter was to sort of express that stuff again, and then it was also sort of a tribute to everybody that had worked on it, because all these folks that had worked on it have worked on a piece that won't be seen. And so I just wanted to pay tribute to everybody that had done the work for them, because at the end of the day, I got to go work with these guys.
Here's a what if, Mike. What if your vision of the Punisher has come a little too close to what Marvel planned for the Punisher?
Awesome.
Yeah. What if the only reason they're shutting it down is that it's just a little bit too close to what they were actually planning to do? How would you feel if that film came out and it's similar, it's got that same feel to it?
Let me tell you, dude, I would be buying a movie ticket, and I would be probably having the same experience that I had when I saw Pacific Rim. So
cool.
If that was the case, then yeah. And if they're basing it on Rucka's stuff, then he doesn't know about it.
Yeah, sure.
So if that's what happens, then fucking awesome. You know, people don't get to see the movie that we made, it's a bum out. But if it ends up, if just the article and all of this sort of push it in a direction for Marvel to go, well, you know what? The fans really don't want some watered down thing. Like they want something that is rated R and that is more thought provoking than just a guy that runs in a room and shoots people.
Yeah. We had a couple of comments on an article that we wrote about the film. And one of the comments, I think this is perhaps a fan who would prefer a watered-down version. He writes anonymously, "What do you expect, right? I've been on Petch's site in the past, and the vast amount of pornographic images would never ever tickle Marvel's fantasy. Has this guy ever seen anything Joss Whedon has done?" Yeah, I picked that one because I thought it was amusing. I just think, yeah, this is what you've done wrong, Mike. You're not Joss Whedon.
Well, I mean, dude, the truth of the matter of it is that the movie business is a business, and we deal with it a bunch when we do our music videos and we do our commercial stuff. It really is just going in and being a good businessman. And the thing that Joss Whedon does really well is he knows how to work the business. He's awesome at it. He's really good. And the same thing with Favreau, and the same thing with, what's his name, that did Star Trek?
J.J. Abrams.
Like, he's amazing at it. Like, those guys know how to, they know how to wow the business. And they also know how to keep the fans happy. Like, they have the perfect balance of the two, you know?
Yeah.
Is that something that I could do? I need time to do it. I think it would be a lot of fun to try to do something like that. And the thing that we try to do, and the thing I try to do when I make my stuff, is I'm always conscious of what I would want to see as a filmmaker and what fans want to see. And so when we're making our pieces, as short as they are because of constraints, but when we're making our stuff, I'm always thinking about how the audience is going to react to this thing. And my, if you look at my influences on where I come from, John Carpenter and The Thing and Road Warrior and all that stuff everybody else is tapping into right now, but Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, like all these movies that we're constantly watching here at the office that a lot of the younger generation haven't seen yet. Like all of that stuff we love, you know, and that's the stuff that influences me. So I think the combination of being a good artist and being a good businessman is the only way you'll ever work for a corporation like Marvel, you know?
Yeah. The film is done. It's not being seen. There's a lot of fans that want to see it. What can they do?
I mean, all you really can do is try to get somebody at Marvel to see it. I mean, let's be honest. They haven't even seen the movie, fellas.
Yeah. So people can tweet them. People can email them. People can Facebook message them.
It's the internet, so you can... Marvel has contact information, so you can find it and then and talk to them. And then, I mean, is that going to ultimately do it? I don't know. If it does, then it would be a wonderful, pleasant surprise, and then everybody could see this piece that we worked on and see our vision of the Punisher. If it doesn't, you know, it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna lose sleep over it in the back end.
I think you're being very magnanimous, and I, you know, I respect that immensely. I mean, I was truly, actually, really disappointed when I found out that the film is not coming out, at least not now. At this time, and it was something I was really looking forward to seeing. So personally, I would love to see it. I have tweeted Marvel. I will continue to do so, and I would love to see it. So yeah, I would encourage others, if they really want to see this work, if it piqued their interest enough, and I know there's a lot of people for whom it did, I would say contact Marvel, and whoever you can, you know, there are a million different Twitter accounts associated with Marvel. You know, pick the best ones and get in touch and let's try and get this film seen. And you know, if it does come out, we of course will post about it. We'll of course be very pleased to watch it and have nothing but good to say about it, I'm sure. Mike, it's been fascinating talking to you about this. Is there anything you want to promote, anything you've got coming up, or anything you want to talk about?
No, and the reason why I don't is I don't want people to feel like that's what I'm doing.
Yeah,
because it's not what I'm doing. It's really anything that you've seen based around it, anything of the advertising, it all fits the theme of what the film is, and it all fits the time period and the vibe. So it's like it's not about promoting what I'm doing right now.
Right. And yeah, hopefully one day we'll have you back on the show and we'll be able to talk about the film having seen it. And that would be great. I'd really like that.
Thank you, fellas. I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate the fact that that people really do care, you know, and that people really do care about art, and people do care about the hard work and the hard labor that people put into things. And, you know, we did make a piece of fan fiction, and someone else owns the rights to it. So if they decide that you're not allowed to see it, then that's their prerogative. At this point, I just really want everybody to sort of think twice about what they want from a Punisher, and it write to Marvel and tell them that you want a better Punisher. The cool part is that we're all the consumers, so we actually control. And the funny thing is that people forget that. But in the long run of things, you control shit. Like, if you don't want a PlayStation that has a camera that looks in your house, don't buy it.
Mm.
If you want a better film, then just tell them that you want something better. And that's really what we were trying to do. I'm not dogging. I think they can pull it off. I really do. I think that what Marvel's doing these days, and with the amount of profit that they're making on these films, it's enabling them to take risks because they have that kind of money.
Mm.
You know, and for something like The Punisher, it doesn't have to be a $100 million movie. You could do The Punisher dirt cheap. And if you did like a series for it, you can do it very cheap and very dramatic and really cool. And there's something so sweet about it. I was reading that, oh God, my brain just shut right down. The guy who directed Narc. He did the new A-Team. Carnahan. I'm sorry. I know. I'm a love of stuff. Joe Carnahan. I heard about the Daredevil. He was like a gritty, like 1970s, like really awesome and dark piece that didn't end up getting made. That would have been cool as shit. Like, it's not like I'm the only guy that's coming up with these ideas. There's a lot of other writers and there's a lot of other people in this business that are pitching these really great ideas to this company. But I feel like this company gets really concerned about middle America.
Yeah.
Maybe they're right to do so. Maybe that's why they make like billions of dollars in profit, because they found the right equation to tackle that. Mm. What will suffer in that is the love that we have for these ultra-violent characters that ultimately were created from that business. It's not like we're approaching them with something that they don't know about and that isn't written. You know, like Rucka's book is a script. What we ended up shooting, there's one scene that pays homage to the book. The rest of it's all really original material. His book is a script for a show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, what show do we make? I don't know. Let's go down to the warehouse that has books, and we'll just pick them off the shelf, and then translate those into screenplay form, and then make it. I never really understood the new Wolverine movie, man. Like,
I haven't seen it yet. Is it any good?
I won't spoil anything.
Have you heard there's a longer cut coming out on Blu-ray? It's apparently 40 minutes longer.
I think that's really cool that they do that stuff, and then they make it very enticing for you to watch that afterwards. That's awesome. They just do stuff in that script that, as someone that's been reading the character for ages, it's like, why did you do that? And why do we have to go around this whole circle of... There's plenty of really good source material to pull from, like, really good source material to pull from.
Yeah.
But are you making those changes because that if you pull from the source material, it would be too bloody and then you couldn't get 13-year-olds in to see it? All right, I get you. It's a business book. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all about the PG-13 these days, so I think it's a shame.
Well, yeah, but that's because they put such a lofty budget behind it. So, like, they make these things at such a high, high, high price range that you have to appeal to that.
Yeah.
Like, you have to appeal to, like, the common denominator, because you have to make that loop back, you know? So take a character that is smaller and do something smaller with it. They were doing that with the Ghost Rider stuff, and whether or not you like the Ghost Rider movies, like, the last one was done by the guys in the Crank movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think we're Nick fans. I don't think we're fans of either of those. Yeah.
Well, the first one's not too bad.
I will say this about that movie. Whether or not you thought it was the best movie or a cool flick, I like those two directors. I think they're cool as hell. And I think they're cool because they take risks. They're constantly pushing and have like a real specific stink on their movies. Like, they have a style that when you sit down and watch it, you're like, all right, I know what I'm in for. I know what this thing is. And then they took a lot of really humorous and crazy risks with a character. And it had to be a lower budget where they were able to do that. And the movie, I guarantee you that movie's going to be a cult classic. Like, it'll be one of those movies like 10 years from now, 15 years from now, that people are popping in and drinking beers to and having drinking games over and loving the shit out of it. So, I mean, whether or not it was like the ultimate Ghost Rider movie, Ghost Rider's another Punisher character. He's another very flat, one-dimensional character, you know?
Wasn't that Ghost Rider film made by a sort of a smaller subdivision of Marvel? Isn't it Marvel Knights? Isn't it a shame that, you know, the Punisher couldn't be made under that label?
And I think it has been. The past ones have been. I just think that, they were made at Lionsgate or something like that, I think. I think that they just were made by folks who really don't love the Punisher. I don't want to speculate, but who directed the last Punisher? I think it was I think the lady was like a stunt woman, right? Or she was like a stunt coordinator or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I've only watched it the once.
Oh god, there was this great part where all the bad guys, of course, were parkour kids, so they could jump from fire escape to fire escape and they could leap through windows.
Yeah.
And that shit that was really cool in the Bourne movies, that everybody was like, alright, cool, now let's can that and put it in every fucking movie that's in.
Yeah.
And so you're watching these stunt guys do this jump from rooftop to rooftop, and then the Punisher just shoots him with a rocket launcher. And it was like the ultimate end to parkour stuff. Like, that joke in there was phenomenal. You know what I mean? That was a really great joke. But overall, those movies to me are like the Friday the 13th movies, you know? Like, it's like there's this big fucking dude that's pissed off because his wife's dead, and every once in a while he like gets a headache that's loaded with flashbacks, you know? And then he walks into a room, and of course he's wearing like body armor and face body armor, so like a room full of fucking 25 guys with fully automatic bullet, like wall piercing like bullets, can't kill him, you know?
Yep,
and then like, how does he survive? Oh, he shuts the lights off, you know? And then he makes it out of there. Like, to me, there's no risk. There's no
connection to the character. You're not worried about the character. So you're basically playing the Jason Voorhees game, where it's like, how many people can he kill, and then how does he kill them? You know? Yeah. And there was a whole run of comics that were written that way, where he was just slaughter-festing, and there's a whole fan base that really loves that. But I think it's proven with the past films that, that it really isn't a successful way to do a movie. The last Punisher movie, I think I saw a statistic somewhere. The last Punisher movie was like the worst grossing Marvel entity, or worst grossing Marvel film since like Howard the Duck. You know?
There's a comparison.
Nothing wrong with that.
So, I mean, and I'm not, like, the director was really cool, her work was really cool, but the story itself was just shit. You know? And so it really would be nice to do a series that we actually give a fuck about Frank Castle, and we really care about the people that he's affecting. Who are these bad guys? Like, why do all the bad guys have to be fucking, like, dumb guineas? You know? Like these bad guys have just as much thought going into what they do as he has going into what he does. So that could be fascinating to watch too. So.
I mean, yeah, the Dread, used Dread as an example before. You know, they could use that model, low budget, keep it fairly contained in and one location, do it quite cheap, make it gritty, put some thought into it, and it could be a great thing.
Have you seen that technology that Marvel has when you read comic books? It's like that AR technology.
Yeah, I've given it a go.
Yeah, where you get your phone out and you take a picture of one of the pages, and then they either show you some sort of behind the scenes thing or something else. Like, it's really cool, right?
Yeah.
What if you made a fucking book? You wrote the book, and half the book was book, and then you could actually shoot the page itself, and then you went in and you watched the scene.
Yeah, that would be cool.
You actually watched something that happened with it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this character is, like, rich for that sort of format. Like, we don't need to see him on the big fucking screen. We don't need to see him follow, like, the traditional standard movie three-act structure. Like, the fans that love this guy will just want to watch these little moments and these little scenes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that to me would be a lot of fucking fun to do. And then it would be low stress compared to doing the bigger stuff, low money compared to doing the bigger stuff. And then you're getting content, you're helping build the mythology. And if you could team up with someone like Rucka and be like, all right, cool, let's actually write little pieces and let's make little pieces and put those little pieces out. Like, actually put online content on the Marvel fucking website. So my only purpose to going to Marvel website isn't to buy t-shirts and look at what new books are out. I actually go there to watch new content that's released on it. Like, there are other models that, like, the fan film stuff that worked for Mortal Kombat. Like, those guys are on their second season.
That's right, yeah. We've discussed that on the podcast before, yeah.
Like, what are their 3 million view average episode?
Yeah, I don't know the figures, but yeah, it's certainly very popular.
Yeah, man. Like, so, like, why can't you do that with a character that's dead anyway? Instead of trying to go pitch it to a television network and make him into some FBI agent, vigilante, or whatever the hell it is that they were going to do with it, put it on the internet. Put it on the same format, the same place that you can watch some of the craziest, filthiest trash. Put the Punisher in the world that he would be a vigilante in, which is the internet.
can you see yourself ever taking another character, making another fan film, Mark?
I won't touch anything from Marvel. And I'll be honest, like, the only reason why I did to begin with was because I loved this character so much and I wanted to see him become something. But I was also under the impression from seeing these other fan films that had survived that maybe they were into quality. Maybe they were into something like that. Maybe it was, if it looked really cool and they liked it, then they left it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just figured that was the case. Then it's like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? So you guys really aren't down for this sort of thing? All right, so then let's not pretend that we are. Like, if you guys aren't down for it, then just come out and say that, you know, we're not down for this.
Yeah,
Like, fan films, we're not into that. Okay, all right.
It would be fascinating to find out the reasons why they've let these other fan films be released and yours not. And I know you say it's not like a personal vendetta, it's more of a you're caught up in the mechanics of the legal system rather than anything, but it would be fascinating to find out who made that call, like who saw your work and said, right, this one, no.
I hope I've said it right, man. Like, a lot of people get really overzealous when they read stuff and they're like, you know what, fuck Marvel, and like they're holding back artists. And it's so cool that people are that pumped about it, and that are that pumped about the work. I don't think Marvel is the devil.
No.
And I don't think that another company that has purchased them is causing them to be the devil. I think that we just got caught up in some sort of fucking business shit, you know? And there needs to, like, if Marvel doesn't want fan films made, then come right out and say, we do not approve fan films at this point.
Well, there it is. That's the story. That's the situation. Mike, thank you ever so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. You're very passionate, very articulate, and you know, you've painted a vision of the film that I would love to see, and hopefully I will do one day. So yeah, I hope that it happens, that we get to see it. I wish you every success with your future endeavours. I hope that, you know, you don't turn into Joss Whedon, but if that's what you choose to do, then, you know, fair play. And you know,
I really appreciate it, fellas, and I really appreciate the fact that there are people like you guys out there that really care about art.
Thanks. Yeah, it's appreciated. So yeah, we'll keep an eye out, and we'll keep in touch, and yeah, if you have anything out in future of interest, do let us know. We'll keep people posted, and you're definitely on our radar now. So thank you very much for joining us, and yeah, it's been a privilege.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, fellas. It's really fun to talk to you guys.
TheUnheardNerd.com.